Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
In the run-up here to Veterans Day, we spend time in this hour throughout, the past few weeks. We're going to introduce you to veterans that we think have great stories to tell and create further inspiration and maybe cause you to pay it forward and tell a few more stories. Scott Mance here spent 23 years in the Army, 18 as a Green Beret, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Panama, Iraq, Afghanistan. He's seen it, he's been there, and he's walked the walk. His book, Game Changers, Going Local to Defeat Violent Extremists, I think is pretty well known. And are you speaking at Benedictine, Scott?
Actually, I'm going to be running a workshop there, Steve, and the local Chicago veterans are going to be the ones speaking there, telling their stories from the stage.
Is that the Warrior Voice program?
It is, yeah. Saturday night.
Anyway, nice to see you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your service.
I hope
you never get tired of hearing that.
You know, I don't. I never get tired of hearing it. It was such a great ride, and I see such sincerity when people say that, Steve. And I think about my Uncle Jerry when he came home from Vietnam, and you know,
wasn't
people
same,
were throwing dog feces at him. So I'm happy to hear people say it.
And your lovely wife is here,
and
I don't want to forget to mention, because we try to do it always, just to mention the family sacrifice when someone is career service like you were.
Absolutely. I every time I speak, I'm a professional storyteller now, and when I go on stage, she's the first person I bring up on stage. If you want to see what a hero looks like, you just look at her and my kids.
Yeah, and she said you forgot to take the garbage out.
Yeah.
Speaking of kids, how many do you have?
Three boys, Cody, Cooper, and Braden.
Well, you got a nice family, obviously, and you got a heck of a good life going. Are you lucky? Because you lost buddies out there.
Yeah, I lost a lot of friends, and I'll tell you why I'm lucky is because I believe I got to run with some of the greatest men and women on the planet, some of the best leaders that ever lived. I wanted to be a Green Beret since I was 14 years old, growing up in a little logging town, and then to be able to look at my sons, almost a quarter of a century later at my retirement, and say, guys, your dad was able to do what he dreamed of as a 14-year-old
right.
boy. I mean, I'm lucky.
And that's all you want for your kids. You want your kids to find something they love and chase it.
Fulfilling your dream. I mean, that's what makes this country great, and I got a chance to do it.
What was the inspiration for you as a kid?
A Green Beret walked into our soda shop that didn't even have a stoplight.
What part of the country?
Mount Ida, Arkansas.
Okay.
And this guy, his name's Mark, walks in, dressed to the nines with his Class A uniform, the beret cocked on his head. And I looked at him and I said, that's what I'm going to be right there. I had no idea what the heck he was, but I knew that's what I was going to do. And he ended up mentoring me until I retired just 5 years ago.
That's kind of love at first sight.
Without a doubt. And it's so funny. The SEALs, the Rangers, the Green Berets, the guys that I ran with in combat, they all had similar stories. They decided at 14, 15 years old, that's what they were going to do.
Obviously, Afghanistan's still going on. It's the longest war we've ever been involved with. You saw it close up.
Mm-hmm.
Are you optimistic, pessimistic, in the middle about the people there and our effort there?
I am right now guardedly optimistic as long as we stay engaged in the country. One of the things I write about in my book, Game Changers, is I think we got it wrong for many, many years where we tried to project a Western democracy in a country that
totally
is largely
agree.
Tribal. And we got it wrong. And so just walking the enemy down in any of these places and trying to attrit them, we're never going to win that war. Until the Afghans can stand on their own, that's what it's going to take. And that's going to take many, many years of engagement.
One of the biggest problems, as I understand it, and certainly give me your perspective on this, is when one of the main ways to make a living there is the poppy fields.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like to shut down the drug trade. It's tough to come in and say, this is how you, with your limited education, knows how to support your family. We're not going to burn these fields until you can't do it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I grew up in 7th Special Forces Group fighting the drug war in Colombia in the 90s.
Sure.
Right. So we danced this dance before.
Right.
And, typically anytime you walk into a rural area that depends on a certain crop, licit or illicit, and you say, I'm from the government, how do you like me so far?
Yeah.
You're not going to win a lot of folks over. And to then start eradicating their crop, the way that they feed their family, it's not going to go well. So it is going to be a long slog there with the opium trade. But I've seen, look at Colombia today, Steve. It's a completely different country from what it was in the 90s. And I think a large part of that is persistent, patient engagement by the United States over time to build capacity. It's not sexy, but it's the only way I've seen it work.
Well, and you have to have responsibility of local government, right? You've got to have leadership of local government, so you can leave them one day and let them be grown-ups and handle their own deal.
And you also have to have responsibility of local societies, local elders, local tribes, and recognize that in a lot of the places around the world, they're not Jeffersonian democracies. These are places where local elders make the decisions, and we have to respect and empower that so that the bad guys can't come in there and marginalize those folks and exploit them. That's what happened in Iraq recently with ISIS. I mean, they pushed the elders out of the way and they took over. So we've got to empower formal and informal governance around the world. And sometimes we don't get that one as clearly.
There was kind of a jumbled description of this, but I sort of liked it in a way. It said, I go to somebody's house for dinner. I don't walk in and rearrange their furniture.
Absolutely.
I have dinner with them. I make a friend and hopefully they trust me and we go forward together. That sort of summed it up for me.
Well, I think you said it very well. I mean, whether I'm teaching or training in the Shura room of elders or the boardroom at a commercial bank, you got to meet people where they are, right? If you walk into a room from the top down and you start prescribing how the tune needs to go, people are going to push away from you. If you meet people where they are, not where you want them to be, which is kind of a Green Beret mantra, a lot of times they'll come along with you. They'll choose to follow you.
Scott Mann is here. Spent 23 years in the Army, 18 as a Green Beret. Obviously, we won't have enough time to hit every part of it, but I could talk to you forever. But in the meantime, we've got a real problem in this country, and I know that as part of the Warrior Voice program, you worry about it too. The good news is we talk about PTSD now. The good news is we talk about soldiers and what they have to come home to. And again, the families, what the families deal with when folks come home, male, female, come home and they're damaged by what they saw and what they experienced. What's your take on all of this, especially when the soldier suicide, military suicide, it's like an oxymoron. Mm. How can we have soldiers killing themselves and we know they're doing it in record numbers?
At a record number. And what I tell folks is we have a serious challenge on our hands here in the country with military transition. We have over 20,000 veterans a month coming out of military service, you know, and we're in the longest war in our nation's history, Steve. You're talking 17 years. My son Cody was 3 when the towers fell, and he's on his path to become an infantry lieutenant and fight that same war, right? I mean, so this is the longest war. This is almost four times longer than World War II. And the thing is, less than 1% of the American population has fought in this war, so the same people are going over it back over and over. And, you know, that sustained trauma, that sustained exposure to combat can have a real impact. But also, a lot of these folks don't have PTS. They have transition stress because they're going from the world of the military that's kind of an honor-based culture to, you know, look right outside the window here. I mean, everybody's it's a different world. It's a different planet. And so I went through that myself when I transitioned from the military. I felt like I'd lost my identity. I felt like I'd lost a real sense of my purpose, and we see that as a true challenge for our veterans. So we try to help them reconnect with that purpose when they come home.
Because you come home, you in all likelihood, I don't know what the average length of service is now, but you in all likelihood are going to have 30, 40 years of your life, maybe 50 years of your life that you're going to have to figure out what to do and be an effective member of society.
Right. I mean, I was 44 years old when I retired.
And most guys don't do a term like you did.
Right. And they're usually a lot younger than me, but I was 44 and I'm looking around and as I'm putting my Birkenstocks on and my T-shirt, you know, now my new attire in retirement. Same. And I'm like, okay, well, is this it? I mean, is this the run that I was meant to do?
Right.
And so, you know, as meaning seeking creatures, when we lose our purpose, when we lose our identity, that's not a healthy thing. And if you've seen combat, that can be even more dangerous. Sure. So what I had to learn the hard way after several years was that when I started reconnecting with the stories that I lived in combat and I started sharing them here in our communities, that's when I started to kind of heal. And that's why my wife and I started the Hero's Journey, which is to help guys and girls from the military reconnect with their stories and start to share those stories on the home front, because stories are such a healing mechanism for combat and trauma. And most societies around the world, that's what they do.
So the power of talking. I remember my dad was a World War II guy, and he didn't talk much.
That's
but when his buddies were around, they would talk.
Absolutely.
Because they knew each other, and it helped him. I know it helped him.
Yeah, and Sebastian Younger writes about this in his book, Tribe, that most societies around the world, you know, they bring their warriors home as a matter of course. Communities gather around, and they allow the warriors to tell the stories, the hero's journey. The hero hears a call. The hero goes on a journey into the belly of the well, comes home changed, and shares those lessons with people on the home shore. That's why we named it that, is because here at home, I mean, if you think about what's going on with the country, Steve, I mean, we need these lessons. We need these high performers and these leaders sharing their
stories.
All that
training?
Absolutely.
All that discipline?
Yeah, but most of the guys feel like either they can't talk about it or people don't want to hear it. And the reality is, I think a lot of folks want to hear it.
Amen.
They want to hear these stories.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And good for you and your wife for giving an opportunity here.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, this Saturday night, they're going to do it right there at Benedictine University.
Yeah, let's just make sure people know about this. Everybody's welcome?
Everybody's welcome. It's called
You don't have to do like 20 solid push-ups?
Well,
to
we're
going to
do burpees, but children under seven
burpees.
Will not have
I
to do
hate
burpees.
Burpees.
We'll just do one-arm push-ups. No, I mean, it's free, and it's going to be kind of like a TEDx-style event where that day I'm going to train the veterans personally on how to tell their stories powerfully,
okay.
And then they're going to take the stage. We've got quadriplegic Green Berets. We've got guys with their working dogs, local Chicago veterans, and they're going to take the stage, and they're going to share their stories and, more importantly, their lessons with Chicago citizens. And I think, personally, if you really want to honor veterans on Veterans
Day,
get out in that audience and hear those stories. It is powerful stuff.
Goodwin Hall Auditorium at Benedictine. Doors open at 6. Speakers start at 7. And it's just a couple hours. Not going to keep you all night, and you're going to be inspired, and you're going to go pay it forward. For your books, for everything else related to you, where do we do to follow you there?
Yeah, so if you want to check into any of that, the easiest thing is just go to rooftopleadership.com. All of my books and leadership content are there, and we talk about this as well. But if you're interested in the event this Saturday, warriorvoice.org.
And best to your family. Nothing but good feelings for your son as he goes off on his journey as well.
We're proud of him.
I bet you are. And nice to meet your wife.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Listen, learn, laugh. 720 WGN.